The next day, John was there again with two of his disciples. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" They said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." The word of the Lord.
Good morning. It's been a while since I've been up here. Nice to be up. It's funny, you know, public speaking never gets old. When you haven't done it for a while, you get nervous again. And I really feel for those of you who only get, like, you teach some of our, like, the women's studies, you only get up here, like, every 3 months, so you never get to get in a rhythm, and you're nervous every time you do it. Now I know how you feel. So it's great to be back. I want to just acknowledge Dan and Sherry Finley today, and many of you know them and love them, and we love you, and many of you know that their son, who's mid-50s, just lost a two-year fight with cancer, went to be with the Lord yesterday, family present, and Ryan, he's just an amazing man of God. Mark and I got a chance to be with him and them earlier this week, and his disposition was just remarkable. A man you could tell loved the Lord and knew where he was going. And so many of you love the Finleys, and you may not know that just happened. And so, but we love you so much. And we are, it was a very painful, physically painful 2 years. We are grateful he's out of that pain. But we grieve with you guys. We know this is not the answer that we all hope for. And so we love you guys. And I'm so glad you're here today. I love that you came the next day. And that speaks to who you are and what this family is for you. And so, grandson? Ryan's son. Oh, Ryan's son is here. Yes. Oh my gosh. Sorry, what's your name?
Carter.
Carter's here as well. Yeah. We're so glad you're here, Carter. Yeah. Yeah. So we love you guys, and there'll be a service. We'll get those details out to you when that comes. But we love you guys. So yeah. Yeah. It's been a heavy month or so around here. A lot of grief, a lot of hard things. And I love this community. I love watching how this community responds to that. And so you guys have been really great in a number of situations. It's really sweet. So, all right. So we are jumping into our summer series today. I'm really grateful for Todd Pickett, who taught 2 weeks ago, and Matt Hall, our own Matt Hall, last week. I thought they did a fantastic job. And this summer, we're going to go through a series called Questions Jesus Asked. And, you know, you read the Gospels. We haven't been in the Gospels for about a year. Jesus is always fielding questions. People are always asking questions of Jesus. He's a rabbi and he's an expert. So he's always getting these questions coming at him. But I thought it'd be interesting to look at what about when Jesus asks a question? I mean, I'm intrigued, right, when Jesus asks. I want to know what kind of questions he's asking. And oftentimes in good rabbi fashion, someone will ask him a question and he'll answer with a question. You know, he does that kind of move that rabbis do. So each week we're going to look at a question that Jesus asked. We'll look at about probably, I guess, around 10 questions this summer. And I just wanted to give you a couple examples so you kind of know what's coming. Oftentimes Jesus' questions are very open-ended, such as the one we get this morning. What do you want? We're going to talk about that question today. Sometimes they're open-ended questions, but then he goes on to answer his own question right away, such as this one. Who is my mother and who are my brothers? And they said, well, I'll tell you who they are. And he goes on to answer that. And other questions are, I would call them rhetorical questions. You know the answer by the way he asks the question, such as this. Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? Answer, none of you, right? So we're going to look at questions Jesus asked, and I wanted to start with maybe one of the most basic of all questions. It's in this passage today, this simple question, what do you want? And I want to have a conversation today about desire, about our desires, about our wants, our longings, and what on earth that has to do with the journey with Jesus, or what it doesn't have to do with a journey with Jesus, depending on how you think about these things. And I just want to acknowledge that this is a very interesting conversation today. You get to decide whether you really want to enter into this question or not. But this is a complicated conversation. This churns up a lot of things, I think, in some of us, if we're willing to bring what's inside of us to this conversation. So this is a choose your own adventure today. You get to decide, I can't do this for you, whether you want to really enter into this conversation about desires and wants. I think it's a really, really rich one, but there are landmines all over the place, and we're heading in. So I hope you head in with me. You know, I think we all have our own unique relationship with our desires. Some of you in this room, the way you experience life, you kind of know what you want, and you don't have a problem going after the things that you want, right? Like, as long as it's within like a basic moral framework, right? Like, I kind of know what I want, and I know how to get what I want. Duh, like it's not that hard, right? Others of you in this room, you have no idea what you want because you've spent your life thinking about what the people around you want. And you've spent all your life trying to figure out what do they want? And if someone were to ask you, what do you want? The answer is, I don't know. I've never really asked myself that question. That's a terrifying question for me. And we all have this, we wonder what our wants have to do with our faith and our journey with Jesus. I would guess some of us in this room, we kind of suspect that Christianity, like if I were to be a really committed Christian, that's going to take me away from the things that, if I'm honest, I really want in life. Like I think like if I were to be a really committed Christian, I'd probably have to take my wants and put them on the shelf and sacrifice those in order to do this thing. That's what a really committed Christian would do. And so that's why I'm not a really committed Christian. I'm kind of committed, but I kind of want, there's things I really want, and so I try to go after those, and I also try to do this thing a little bit, and that's kind of the dance of my faith and my own desires. Some of us in this room, we have wants that we have brought to Jesus, and they were good wants, maybe. They weren't bad wants, and it felt like we just got silence from Jesus on those. Like we like went in and like I'm gonna bring my desires to Jesus, and I did, and I got nothing in return. And we sit in this conversation of desire. We're like, and now our hearts are kind of protected from that. We're like, yeah, I'm not gonna fool me once, you know, shame on you, Jesus, but fool me twice. Like I'm gonna keep myself a little bit protected. I'm not gonna just go bold with the things I want. Because I've done that, and now I'm honestly not up for that anymore. And some of you are in this room, and you would say, you know that verse, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Some of you are here, you're like, I'm testimony to that. I feel like I'm a broken sinner, but I've tried to delight myself in Jesus. I look back at my life, he has truly given me the desires of my heart. That is what my life has been about. So wherever you find yourself, and we all find ourselves in a different place, I want us to take in this simple question today. What do you want? And I wanted to bring that to Jesus. So we're actually going to look at a couple passages today. We'll kick it off with this one that Elise just read to us. In John's gospel, it's interesting. The very first words out of Jesus' mouth in John's gospel is this question, what do you want? He hasn't spoken until now, okay? What I love about John's gospel, more than the other gospels, John's gospel often works at multiple levels. If you know, like there's like a plain meaning of a passage, but John often has these deeper, almost symbolic, richer meanings underneath it. And oftentimes, the characters speak more deeply than they realize in a moment. And us, the reader, if we've read the book a couple times, we like, oh, you don't even know what you're saying right here. I know what you're saying because I know where this is going. You just thought you were saying this, but John is like, oh, but look at what's underneath this. And that's how I see this original encounter between Jesus and two of his disciples. There's like a plain surface meaning, but then John wants us to see, like, this is actually the quintessential, like, discipleship invitation and encounter from Jesus to these two men. So, plain reading is this, right? This is John the Baptist just baptized Jesus, and Jesus is cruising around, and two of John's disciples are kind of watching. John says, hey, That's the guy I was talking about. That's the Lamb of God who would take away the sin of the world. So they start following Jesus. Plain, simple reading. Jesus turns around. He says, what do you want? What's up, guys? What do you want? And they say, Rabbi, where are you staying? You know, where are you lodging tonight? They're not up. He lives up in Galilee, but he's down here. So where are you lodging tonight? And Jesus answers, I'm at the Lion and the Lamb Inn, you know, tonight. Come and check it out, right? Come and see. We'll see if there's more rooms for you there, okay? Plain reading, right? Just a basic kind of introduction. But let me suggest there's a deeper meaning that John would want us to hear in each of these phrases. As you read the gospel, you'll realize that. Let me take it again. Deeper reading, Jesus turns and says, what do you want? Now, literally in the Greek, and if you have the ESV or some other translations, you'll have this literally, what are you seeking? That's what he actually says. What are you seeking? What is it you're after? What are you hoping to find in me? What are those longings inside you that have drawn you to me? It's an invitation for them to consider their desires as their and what that has to do with them reaching out to him. They respond, Rabbi, where are you staying? Right? Where are you staying tonight? But if you know John's gospel, the word they use, let me rephrase it, Rabbi, where are you abiding? Where are you remaining? And if you know John's gospel, that's one of his most important words. Todd Pickett 2 weeks ago talked about this word. We see it come to fruition in John 15, where Jesus is talking to his disciples. I am the vine, you are the branches, right? Abide in me, remain in me, stay in me, and I will remain in you. Rabbi, where are you remaining? They don't know what they're saying, right? Where are you abiding? Now let me suggest the rest of John's gospel is an answer to that question. Where is Jesus abiding? What centers you, Jesus? What grounds you? What's home base for you? Where are you abiding? What is the answer to that question as you've read John's gospel? I want to actually hear, where is Jesus abiding? In the Father, right? In the heart of the Father, in the Father's love and in the Father's will. That's where his identity, where his security, where his authority, where his purpose comes from. He's abiding in the Father. Where are you abiding? And Jesus' response, come and you will see. Right? Surface, you can check out where I'm lodging tonight. The deeper one, spend time with me. Be with me. Follow me. Watch me. Watch where I am abiding. Watch me abide in the Father's love and in the Father's will. Live with me. Walk with me. And you too can learn to abide where I'm abiding. This is the invitation of discipleship. It's the quintessential discipleship invitation. Come and see. And for these disciples, the next 3 years of their lives will be them answering that call to come and see. For us, the book of John is our opportunity, the next 21 chapters, to read and experience Jesus and come and see where he's abiding. All right, so you're with me so far, right? Simple conversation, but really the quintessential discipleship encounter. These two men being invited to bring their desires, their wants to Jesus, and to follow him along the way and come and see and learn to live life like and with him. All right, so I want to zero in this conversation on our wants, our desires. And so I actually want to go to some other places where Jesus asks a very similar question. What do you want? Okay, so turn with me to Mark chapter 10. Mark 10, verse 46. I want to look at a couple other places where Jesus says, what do you want? Or the way he puts it here is, what do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? Okay? We're going to look at two passages where he asks that same question. Verse 46, I'll read the whole passage here. Then they came to Jericho. This is just before Jesus goes into Jerusalem for his final week of ministry. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means, incidentally, son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. And here's the question. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," Jesus said, "your faith has healed you." Immediately, he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. I think Jesus' question, same question, right, basically, I think it's fascinating, right? Here you have a blind guy sitting in front of you. He's been reduced to roadside begging, right? He's been crying out, "Have mercy on me." And Jesus is looking at a blind man and he says, what do you want me to do for you? And I'm like, really, Jesus? are you that dense? Isn't it painfully obvious what he wants you to do for him? And of course it is. And I find it fascinating that Jesus wants to hear the man answer that question. He knows what it is. He wants the man to speak it, to name it, to bring what is in his heart out into words and to lay his request explicitly before Jesus. Jesus saying, "I want to hear what you want from you. I want to hear it from you." I think there was something for Bartimaeus in that, to actually have to offer it to Jesus that was powerful, that was vulnerable, that was totally dependent, right? I gotta throw that question out in the air without knowing what the answer is going to be. And I want to suggest this morning that I believe part of why we have passages like this is for us today to hear the heart of Jesus. And I believe we have a Savior who actually wants to hear our wants. That he's interested in what it is you want. He's not just interested in what you think he should, or what you think he wants you to want, right? He wants to hear your wants. He wants to hear our wants. He says, "I want to hear it from you. I want you to bring it before me. I don't want you to keep that stuff bottled up and closed off from me. Free invitation. I want to hear it from you. I'm interested. I'm actually interested in what it is you want." Some of us heard those words just then, and it's like bounced off. No way. I know it. I believe it now. I actually believe he is interested in what is it you actually want, just as he was with Bartimaeus. Bartimaeus knows exactly what he wants. "I want to see. I want my sight." And Jesus says, "I am perfectly happy to give you a request," right? "Go, your faith has made you well." And what I love is Bartimaeus receives his sight, but he also receives Jesus, doesn't he? And I love the story ends with him not going, but with him eyes wide open, following Jesus on the road, okay? Very similar to the first passage. He brings his wants to Jesus, and the story ends with him bringing his wants and following Jesus in the presence of Jesus, coming and seeing, literally now seeing, what Jesus is all about. Okay, so this invitation to bring our wants. Now, some of you, if you're anything like me, so far you've heard what I said, but I think you would say, "I feel like it's a little more complicated than that, Dave. That feels real simple. Bring your wants, get what you want. This is awesome," right? I think this is a little more complicated than that, and I would agree. And I think there's two things in particular that make this more complicated, okay? The first is this. This conversation about desire. If we have any self-awareness, most of us would probably go, "I'm not so sure my desires are to be trusted all the time. Like, that, I'm not sure I should bring certain things because I know myself. I'm kind of a complicated individual. I'm not sure that my desires are to be trusted." I want to go to the passage just before this. Really interesting. Right before this passage, you don't even have to turn your Bibles probably. Jesus asks the exact same question to somebody else. And they have a very different response than blind Bartimaeus, okay? So go up to verse 35 in Mark 10. I love this story. James and John, the sons of thunder, right? Two guys who've been following Jesus for 3 years. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. I love that. Exact same question in verse 30. Literally the same question. Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? They replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory. Well, now there's a desire, right? What do you want me to do for you? We want the place of honor and privilege and wealth and status at your side when you come in your glory. We know you have 12 disciples. That's a hard decision to make. So we wanted to get first dibs on that. And it'd be great if you don't tell the other disciples, right? I thought I'd put up a little slide here. I thought that. There it is. You know, Jesus offers this question to multiple people. What do you want me to do for you? And you get a full spectrum of answers from, I want to see, which is understandable, pure, reasonable, beautiful, and I want fame and fortune, which is vain in these two guys right at the moment, and selfish and actually unloving to the other disciples. And I would suspect that if we were to be honest about our own desires, they fall somewhere in the spectrum there, right? They're probably not always as pure as the one on the left, probably not always as vain as the one on the right, but we're a muddled set of desires. I want all sorts of things. Last week, Matt Hall talked about this idea of disordered desires, right? The fact that our desires, they get attached to the wrong things, or they get attached to the right things in the wrong ways. And so our desires are not always to be trusted. And so I think we kind of intuitively know that. And that's why there's a ton of desires that we don't bring to Jesus, right? I'm not going to bring that desire to Jesus. I'm not going to ask for that. That feels a little weird. I'm going to keep that one, you know, kind of closed off. And I'll keep that one to myself. I've actually said it out loud to Jesus. I'd be kind of embarrassed. That's why I just keep it inside. And what I find fascinating about this passage is that Jesus does not condemn these two brothers for bringing a very disordered desire to him. He actually does not condemn them. What he does is he reshapes their perspective on it, right? Look at verse 38. Jesus' response is, you don't know what you're asking. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with? Guys, you actually, those places are reserved for those who go through deep suffering to be on the way to glory. Like, you actually don't know what you're asking. And then the other 10 find out that this conversation has happened, and they're a little bit upset, of course, because they wanted those positions. And so in verse 42, Jesus has an opportunity to call them together and say, okay, object lesson, guys, let me talk about true greatness, right? And he has this famous lines about true greatness comes through service. But he doesn't condemn them. But he receives the desire and he reshapes it. But here's the thing: if they hadn't asked, their desire would not have been reshaped, and we wouldn't actually have one of the greatest teachings on greatness, true greatness in the Bible. And here's the reality: if they hadn't asked Jesus, the desire still would have been there. That wouldn't have changed anything. It would have just stayed locked up inside and kept to themselves. But it would have still been there. And I don't know, I picture James and John, you know, this got written into, like, church history. I picture those guys years later remembering this story, and they're so horrified, right? Like, oh, gosh, I'm so embarrassed. Literally, I didn't know what I was asking. And I think so many of us in our journey with Jesus can relate to that. I mean, I can think of multiple times in my life where something happened, I was just in a huff about something. Like, I was upset, and I was like, I was angry or frustrated or anxious, and I was saying all these things to God that I wanted. And literally, like one good night's sleep later, I look back and I'm like, oh, I didn't know what I was asking. I didn't even know what I was asking. But it was actually the process of bringing the desire to Jesus and sitting with it and then having him reshape it that actually got me to the place of, I didn't know what I was asking. And had I kept it inside, that wouldn't have happened in the way that I think it needed to happen. Jesus was actually the perfect place to bring that desire. But this complicates things, right? We're not sure our desires are to be trusted. And then the other thing that complicates things, I think this, if we're honest, we're not sure Jesus is to be trusted with our desires. We are not sure that he is a safe person to bring our desires to. We suspect he may not be, right? No one's going to say this at church out loud, but this is what our hearts feel. I was thinking of another story. I won't have you turn there. I'll just quote it, where somebody asks the question to Jesus, "What do you want with me?" Let me put it on. Luke 8:28. What do you want? Now, Jesus, we already looked at Jesus says, "What do you want me to do for you?" Now, this is the opposite, right? What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Now, who knows who said that? The demoniac, a guy who was possessed by demons. It's almost the demons speaking through this guy. What do you want with me, Son of the Most High? Now, of course, that question is being asked. They're threatened, right? I'm afraid if Jesus gets the run of this guy's, how we're going to get kicked out, right? We're screwed. Like, what do you want? You're here to torture me. You're gonna take over, and this is bad for us. And I think there's a part of us, honestly, that sometimes wonders that, like, Jesus, what do you want to do with me? If I were to really bring my deepest desires to you, what are you going to do with those? Or there's this fear, like, if I really laid it out there, if I really laid myself out there, really gave you the keys to this house, gave you the run of the place, what are you going to do? I'm not sure I feel comfortable with what you're, I think you're going to start to remodel this place in some ways, right? And I could do some new paint, I'm fine with that, right? Some new furniture maybe, but I'm afraid you're going to knock down some walls that are load-bearing walls. I'm afraid you're going to do some additions that I'm really not interested in. Like, what do you want to do with me? I don't know if I trust the answer to that question. And like I said at the beginning, some of us really feel this because we have brought desires before Jesus. And they weren't disordered. They were like reasonable and wonderful. And we got silence, or we got a no. I'm not going to give you that desire. And we're like, this is such a beautiful desire. This would be good for you. It'd be good for me. It'd be good for the world. Why would you not give me this desire? And we live with profound disappointment with Jesus. And now we're not really sure. I don't know if I love what you want to do with me. And so that makes the journey of desire with Jesus complicated. And I'll just say, I love what Jesus did with this man. And if you know the story, right, the demons were threatened, but Jesus was entirely for this man's good in his restoration and his healing. And he cast out these demons, and the story ends with this man in his right mind, clothed again, sitting at the feet of Jesus with Jesus. And Jesus' heart for this man was only shalom, was restoration, was goodness flourishing, but it meant the demons had to go. It meant some dark parts of him had to go, and that was painful. And I love stories like that because I think they actually do show us Jesus' ultimate intent with all of us is for that kind of shalom and full restoration. But sometimes that journey is an eternal one, and there's pain and there's struggle in the process. But in the end, he truly loves us and wants our good. He wants our restoration. But we don't know if we trust the process, understandably so. So this makes it tricky. And I'm not going to resolve the trickiness today. I will say this. I'm wrapping this up. I was thinking about this conversation from God's perspective this week. And it's actually, it's tricky for us to bring our desires to Jesus, but it's tricky for him too. Because if you want to give your children good things, right? If you're God, you want to give your children good things. And you're God, what is the greatest thing you can give your kids? If you're God, yourself. The greatest thing you can possibly give them is yourself. And so Sometimes you give them what they want to show them that you are the source of all their desires, right? You're the source of all these good desires. But sometimes you don't give them the thing that they want so that you can show them that you yourself are the source of their desires. Because this is the journey, ultimately, with Jesus, is bringing these desires and coming and seeing and walking with him. And over time, these desires being reshaped so that as we go on in this journey, more and more he becomes the very thing that our hearts most desire. And many of you could testify to that journey. I was thinking for myself, I remember when I was, in college and seminary, my mid-20s, I remember I spent lots of time going to God in the mornings, just time with him in the Word, out in nature. Many of you know these stories. But I really, especially back then, I struggled with anxiety, with fear. And every morning when I woke up, if Jesus would say to me on a quiet time, what do you want me to do for you today? Almost every time, you're like, I just want to feel peace. Like, Jesus, I come to you, I'm anxious, I want to spend some time with you, I want to experience peace, and I want to be freed from anxiety so I can go about my days. And in those early years, Jesus would give me peace, like a passage would come out and just be like, boom, and it'd be like, I've heard one person talk about it, like, it's like a bottle, right? He just gave me the bottle, and I'd just suck on that bottle, you know, and then I'd go on my way, it's like, oh, that was so good, like, thank you, you gave me peace. And I remember there's in my mid-late 20s, he stopped doing that. And my quiet times did not bring me peace. And it's really frustrating when you're trying to, like, be freed from anxiety and you spent, like, 30 to 45 minutes and you're more anxious than you were before. You're like, that was a waste of time and I have to go into my day. And I wrestled with that for, like, a year or so. And over time, I experienced God basically saying to me, hey, Dave, you've been coming out here not because you want me. You just want the feeling I can give. You want the bottle. And I'm going to withhold the bottle. That's painful. But I want to show you that ultimately what you want and need is me. I want you to be here for me. Because I'm actually the best thing that I can give to you. And that is the journey that we're on of bringing these desires, good, bad, disordered, whatever, bringing them without just fully, freely, and then watching him fulfill them, watching him say no to them, but on this journey of him reshaping us, on this journey so that ultimately we're growing closer to him and learning that he himself is the thing that our hearts were made for. So I want to leave you with that simple question, what do you want? And that simple invitation, come and see. This is the invitation with Jesus to come and to bring all those desires and to follow him on the road. And I love that all these stories, you have these people coming with desires, but leaving with Jesus, following him on the road. So this is the invitation for you today. And for you, you know, I'm sure this hits you in many different ways. Some of you, maybe you're like, I didn't know I could bring my desires to Jesus. I thought I had to, like, compartmentalize that. And today is a day where, like, you hear Jesus saying, no, I want that. I care about that. And that's a beautiful thing for you to hear today. Some of you, your hearts are now protected from that journey because you've been burned. It feels like you've been burned by Jesus. You're like, I'm not doing that again. And maybe today is an invitation from Jesus. I'm asking you to do it again. Open up your heart to me. You can trust me. Even though I know you're protected and tucked away, you're protected. And some of you, maybe the invitation is, hey, you've got some really disordered desires, and Jesus is like, I want to reshape some of those for you. Whatever it is, I want to actually end. I'm going to end in prayer. I want to give us all an opportunity to actually bring our desires before Jesus, okay? So if you would, bow your heads. And this might feel a little different for some of you. I want to give you sort of an imaginative moment with Jesus, okay? So if you would, picture you go home this afternoon, and I want you to imagine that everyone else, it's just you in the house. Maybe your roommates went out, or your spouse, or your kids, or whoever else, your parents, whoever else in your house is gone, and you're home alone. And just don't get, I'm not getting crazy on you, just follow me in this if you would. This afternoon, there's a knock on your door, and you go and you open the door, and it's Jesus. And whatever you picture Jesus, right, you know it's Jesus. And, wow, Jesus, come in. And you offer him some water, because he said to do that, you know, and he says, thank you. And you sit down at the table, you sit down on the couch, and it's just kind of quiet for a second. You're like, am I supposed to start? Like, where does this conversation go? And then Jesus looks you in the eyes, and he asks you this question. He names you, so in my case, Dave. What is it you want me to do for you? He's got a smile on his face, and he says, what is it you want me to do for you? And I want you to think, in this season of your life, where your life is right now, he's asking you that question. What do you want me to do for you? And part of you is like, this feels like a trick question. Like, I don't know how to answer this. And he knows what you're thinking, and he says, I'm not looking for the right answer. I don't want you to say the thing you think I want to hear. I'm looking for the real answer. What do you want me to do for you? In this season of your life, how would you answer that question? Take a moment to sit before the Lord and ask him what you want.